This is case number 73746C, Jack Lee versus Soon Yi Lee, an individual. Counsel for Mr. Lee, if you wish to reserve some time, please so state.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, my name is Patrick King and I represent the appellant, Jake Lee. At this time, I would like to reserve time for rebuttal.
How much?
5 minutes, Your Honor. After an in-depth analysis and preparation for today's oral argument, we believe that the two issues we, the appellants, can prevail on.
And counsel, if you hold the clock, Mr. Clerk, you submitted an app with the notice of intent to proceed with arguments with, in essence, changing your argument structure. So are you waiving those issues or just subsumed into the arguments you're going to make?
We are waiving those issues, Your Honor.
All right.
The issues we will be moving forward on is the issue of the internet evidence being excluded at trial and the district court's failure to grant a jury trial. We feel those are our two strongest issues for reversal in this matter. Briefly, Your Honors, this case is about allegations of defamation brought by appellants against the respondent. Specifically, defamatory statements made by the respondent alleging that the appellant was being unfaithful to his wife. Additionally, respondents filed counterclaims for assault, battery, and intentional infliction of emotional distress, alleging that for years, appellant was sexually harassing the respondent. The first issue we'd like to address is the question we presented by on appeal is whether the district court was mistaken in excluding electronic internet evidence of the lack of a language barrier between the defendant respondent and her medical providers. We do believe that the district court erred in excluding that impeachment evidence. We asked for a reversal.
What was the form of that evidence? Because we don't have the transcript, so we're not clear what actually happened.
Your Honor, it was in off the medical provider's website. It was the printed biography for the doctor, specifically the doctor from Southwest Medical Associates.
All right, we can come back to that, but we were just curious about that because we weren't sure exactly what you were claiming had been excluded.
Yeah, the court is concerned because we don't have the record. There's no proffer to the court as to what she would have provided had the court allowed it to come in. So that's a major concern for us.
Understood, Your Honor. Well, what we did have was we had, you know, in this day and age, we were able to access the internet. At the time of trial, we were given notice that this information was coming to light, that the reason for the discrepancy between the testimony from the respondent at the time of trial and the issues in the medical records was because there was a language barrier. We looked this up on our smartphones at the time during trial, and we found...
Counsel, were you obligated to disclose that prior to trial?
This was the first time we ever received notice that a language barrier between the doctor and...
It was your case or counsel down below's case to handle. So the question is, was it ever disclosed in an early case conference that this kind of information was going to be presented as to the credibility of one of the witnesses?
Well, Your Honor, that's a great question. We had never actually presented that specific evidence. Obviously, medical records were presented. We were able to go in and look at the medical records and the medical bills for Southwest Medical Associates. However, never at any point from the day this was filed to the day of trial was it ever made aware to us that any kind of discrepancy between the testimony that we would receive, and that was the day of trial, the testimony we got from the respondent, and the information in the medical records being different, that would be an issue of a language barrier.
Counsel, even if we throw out the medical records in this particular case, because of the nature of the two-year alleged assault and battery from down below, and the threshold of what has to be produced, isn't that sufficient by itself?
Well, I think that the fact that you know, this impeachment evidence, which would have attacked directly the credibility of the respondent, the fact that that was left out, I think, was crucial to the district court weighing the credibility of the statements made at trial.
And so, what is our standard of review for the exclusion, as you're saying it was incorrect? What's our standard of review?
The standard of review for this court, Your Honor?
Yes.
The totality of the evidence.
It's discretionary as to this.
Didn't do. Yes, discretionary based on the totality of the evidence. However, you know, what we are alleging is that had we been given a chance, we would have been able to authenticate this information at trial. If you looked at what we submitted, JA00123 to 124, which is a copy of the biography for Dr. Ahn from Southwest Medical Associates, you'd see that not only is his name on there, his biography information, languages he speaks, and of that nature, but his picture is as well. I believe that authentication, which would have been crucial to entering this evidence, would have been what we would have been going for as far as at trial having to push that forward. So that is your Honor, that's our biggest point here. We believe we could have authenticated it.
You could be right about it. It's a new area of the law. What do you do when you're looking at something on the internet through a smartphone and you don't have a hard copy and it wasn't disclosed earlier and you're trying to show the judge? But shouldn't we have the transcript so we can see what the judge's ruling was and why, as opposed to we're just guessing?
Well, I agree, Your Honor. And we did submit the video of the trial of this matter. But as far as why it wasn't disclosed, it wasn't allowed into evidence because it had never been previously disclosed, as the respondents argue in their brief. That paperwork, that documentation that wasn't previously disclosed, our argument was simple. We didn't know that this would be an issue. We were never on notice that the language barrier would have been an issue.
So let me mention this. What do you think the district judge should have done? I mean, let me ask you a question. Again, we don't have a transcript. Did the doctor whose credibility you're alleging could have been impeached, did he actually testify at trial, or are you just talking about the records?
He did not testify at trial, Your Honor. And so, I'm just talking about the biography.
So you're saying that based on this thing you discovered on your cell phone, that the judge should have thrown out medical records just on the spot? Is that what you think the judge should have done?
No, Your Honor. What I think should have been allowed is a chance for us to impeach the respondent on the stand, a chance for us to show her.
Well, did you try to subpoena that guy, to the doctor, to come in and, as your witness, for example, and show this to the judge? Did you try that?
No, but it was the first day of trial, Your Honor. So having been in the middle of trial to subpoena a doctor at that point, and the trial, I believe, was set for 2 days. So, you know, having to bring in a doctor, I think, would have been unfeasible. It would have been a more simple matter to have been given a chance. And to answer the first part of your question, Judge Pfau, I would say that what we're asking for is a chance to have allowed to submit that evidence. And whether it be on our smartphone and found on our smartphone, it could have been authenticated. There could have been a chance to question the respondent witness at the time and see, okay, your testimony right now is that because of the language barrier, that therein lies the issues between the medical records and your testimonies. And my impeachment of that testimony is that that's not true. According to this biography that we found online while you were testifying to this at trial, was that this doctor that you were seeing did in fact speak your language.
So let's say you're right about that. How would that have changed the trial or this appeal? In other words, you're dropping your other arguments on the appeal, like the damages were too much or they weren't supported. Wouldn't it have just gone to those kind of issues? I mean, would this have undermined the whole fairness of the trial not having this, Ms. Sunyi Li impeached by her statement about what the doctor could speak or didn't speak because there's this language barrier and she had an interpreter?
I think that's an excellent question, Judge. And I do believe that it would have been a crucial turning point of the trial, because if you read the order as to the district court and why they ruled the way they did, it came down to credibility. It came down to the credibility of witnesses. It came down to the credibility of testimony between the respondent and the appellant. Had we gotten the information in, the impeachment evidence, I do believe that that would have been a crucial turning point to show that you know, obviously, you know, there is a discretionary level at that point. I don't know how much it would have changed it, but I do believe it to be a crucial turning point.
But would it have gone to the amount of damages, or would it have gone to this person is just not believable at all and disregard everything she said?
Well, of course, Your Honor, our stance would be that this person is not credible. You know, if they can lie about this, something so crucial as far as, so crucial and simple as, you know, what language her doctor speaks as the reason for the discrepancy between testimony and what's in the medical records, then what else could she be lying about? And that would be our biggest point. That would have been something we could have brought up in closing that we were unable to. And obviously, you know, our biggest argument at that point in closing would have gone to attack the heart of the respondent's credibility.
And the idea that if she lied about this, then don't believe anything she said. That would have been the argument?
Correct. If I may move on briefly then to our last and final issue, the question presented is whether the district court erred in refusing plaintiff appellant's request to his right to trial by jury. Your Honors, May 22, 2015 is when we made our motion to enforce the jury trial. Just going back briefly, the complaint, we made a jury demand in the complaint. Yes, it did not meet the requirements of NRCP 38. I agree with that. We did fail to provide the jury fees as was noted in NRCP 38. We marked the box that said no in the joint case conference report that said, will this be a jury trial? I understand all of this, Your Honors. However, what I think is dispositive here is the Walton case. The Walton case.
But counsel, this case is very different from Walton. In Walton, you had two parties of both sides asserted that they wanted a jury trial. In this particular case, your client wanted a jury trial. The other side did not want the jury trial. We additionally have roughly 14 months from the filing of the complaint, the setting for a bench trial. Before this matter seems to come up, there was an early case conference, I understand, and this issue still wasn't raised. So why should we consider it at this point? Because, again, the case law that you're citing is really not applicable to this particular set of facts.
It's that it can be considered, but not that it has to be considered.
Agreed, Your Honor. And respectfully, I would say that the Walton case is applicable in this matter because although it does have some different set of facts and it was, it was denied, the petition for mandamus was denied without prejudice, I think what's important that came out of there was the Walton court indicates a strong preference for a jury trial to be granted to the plaintiff. They even use specific wording as the circumstances of the case at hand appear to present the strongest possible suggestion for the discretionary of granting such a motion.
But that was as to the Walton case. That presumption versus this case, as I said, the facts were different. Both sides wanted a jury trial. In this case, the two sides are at loggerheads in terms of wanting that jury trial. And the language in Walton is not a mandatory. It still leaves the court to discretion to make that call. Why should we vacate that discretion of the court?
Well, some of the factors that the Walton case outlines is, you know, whether or not there was delay or confusion, whether or not there was surprise or prejudice, none of which would have been in the case in this matter when the motion to enforce the jury trial was filed 7 months prior to the bench trial actually taking place. And you know, Your Honor,
remember the judge denied this under Rule 38. Rule 39 wasn't argued, which is the discretionary grant of the jury trial. So the various factors that you're mentioning from Walton, the judge never made findings on them. But as Chief Judge Douglas has pointed out, the circumstances are different. So if we had the reverse here where the judge said, I'm granting the jury trial, the other side might be appealing it, and we'd be saying the same thing. It's within the discretion of the judge.
And again, that's where I would go back to the Walton case and say, though discretion is a big part of granting or not granting this motion, there's still a strong inference. And we still go back to the Constitution itself, where the Nevada Constitution, the United States Constitution, describes as a right to a jury trial as inviolate.
And, Counselor, I'm going to cut you off. You have 1:20 on the clock. I'm going to give you 2 minutes in rebuttal time. We note that, but the concern we have, food for thought for you, is that there is a rule as to that right that the court has put in place, and if it was not followed, why should we allow it to be thrown aside? So when you get up for rebuttal, you can address that.
Thank you, Justice. Thank you, Your Honor.
On behalf of Soon Yi Lee.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Jerian Cho, and my co-counsel, Alice Denton, of the law firm of Denton Cho, appearing for the respondent, Your Honor. Your Honor, this is a very simple, straightforward issue. You know, first,
if I can get you to move that microphone just a little more in front of you, because so your voice will carry.
Okay. Sorry about that. Your Honor. Okay, about this computer printout, about the information about these physicians, medical doctors' language skill. Specifically, it was a Korean skill, Your Honor. It is just, published to the internet, probably by the doctor himself, Your Honor. And during the trial, the district court precluded appellant attempt to introduce this computer printout as evidence to disprove the physician had communicated with the respondent, my client, about her medical condition in English. And the court, district court decision was very proper for several reasons, Your Honor. The first, it is the rule. It is a rule of civil procedure. Rule 16.1 requires a party to provide to other parties the information regarding the evidence that the party may present at trial, including impeachment and rebuttal evidence, at least 30 days before trial, Your Honor, unless otherwise ordered by the trial court. There was no other order, Your Honor. So, but during the trial, during the appellant examination of a respondent, appellant lawyer pulled out this undisclosed document for the first time. And very properly, the district court blocked the attempt, Your Honor, because it was not disclosed. And moreover, there are other reasons that this self-publication of the doctor's languages.
Ms. Cho, can I stop you there?
Sure, yeah.
It was just stated by Mr. Kang, the reason that happened that way is that they were surprised. They weren't expecting this, and that was the only way they could deal with it.
Your Honor, just to attempt to introduce this undisclosed evidence, just a computer printout, which was basically hearsay, was a surprise to us too, and it was prejudicial.
The surprise was the testimony of your client about how things went between her doctor. Were they speaking in English or Korean? What did the interpreter do? So this was a new issue. Now, did anything like this come up before the trial, Abbott at the deposition, or any other document disclosures? Was this really a surprise, or was this something they should have known about, even though it was impeachment?
Your Honor, appellant should have known about it. Appellant knew my client did not speak, did not have a language skill, and the record itself shows the husband was present with my client, Your Honor. And my client's lack of a language skill was already an issue from the beginning, Your Honor. That position was taken with the aid of a court interpreter.
Yeah. Well, but I think the allegation being made here is not that, it's not whether either of the parties has a language ability, it's whether or not the doctor could speak Korean. And the allegation being made is that your client said, testified under oath that the doctor couldn't speak Korean, but in fact the website says he can speak Korean, so your client allegedly is the one who's not being untruthful. It's not your client, whether your client can speak English, it's whether she lied about the doctor being able to speak English. So yes. At what point would they have known about that?
Your Honor, during the discovery, Your Honor, it was not secret this doctor was my client's primary physician. Medical record shows his name, where he was, and he was putting, because, and other than this issue, the medical records were challenged several times, Your Honor. When the medical record is challenged, usually the best thing to do discovery is to call the doctor as a witness and take a deposition, Your Honor. And the name was not hidden. Appellant has ample opportunities throughout the litigation to include him as a test trial witness, not only for the language issue, but for the validity of his, you know, screening and diagnosis, Your Honor. So it is just not client, you know, burden to produce the information about the doctor's language skill, Your Honor. And another thing is that the document, this particular document appellant in attempted to introduce, is some kind of internet publication, self-publication, probably for advertisement purposes, to attract more Korean-speaking, you know, patient. It has just minimum, you know, or zero probative, you know, value to test the doctor's language skill, Your Honor. Especially whether he has a language skill, even if he just speaks Korean, he has some Korean skill, whether his Korean skill is fluent enough to discuss medical condition. It has many layers. Just the internet printout telling just marks or I think language and Korean. That was all the information you know, appellant wanted to introduce. It has a the probative value is very minimal. You know, in NRS 48.035 allows the district court to exclude even relevant evidence on grounds of a prejudice, confusion, or waste of time.
I mean, that's generally true, and yes, it's also true, as Justice Douglas pointed out, the standard of review is abuse of discretion, which is highly deferential. But in the world of case law out there, in courts across the United States, the one kind of evidence that most often leads to reversals by appellate courts is impeachment evidence. Because if somebody's lying about something, that affects the integrity of the proceedings. So, courts are very sensitive to that. If there's some evidence that something really is dishonest going on here, courts are supposed to give a little bit more latitude to that. Because it's not about just lawyering or you screwed up a discovery. It's about, is somebody even telling the truth? So why shouldn't the court have given more leeway to this?
Your Honor, if that internet printout has any probative value, Your Honor, it does not tell anything. It does not indicate anything about whether this doctor and patient spoke English or Korean, Your Honor. So if there is anything indicating that aspect, probably, Your Honor. And another thing is, you know, appellant keep telling that there was conflicting testimony, Your Honor. I don't recollect really significant conflict, but if any conflicting testimony was given, they were already weighed and taken into consideration when this court made a finding, because it was stressed by the appellant, Your Honor. So, even if it was improperly excluded, there's no harm. You know, it was a harmless error, and no, you know, new trial is not necessary. You know. And
is there any way this was so important that it affected the proceeding, it undermined the integrity of the whole proceeding?
Your Honor, I don't think so, and the district court did not think so, Your Honor. So what I'm just saying is that the district court decision, which is within its discretion, there's no abuse of discretion, Your Honor. Judge Wade, whether it was disclosed or not, of course, also the value of this excluded evidence was also weighed, Your Honor. So I'd like to ask this court, this appellate court, to just defer this issue to the district court decision, Your Honor. And, you know, just a second issue about this constitutional right of a trial by jury. Okay. You know, I think more than 5 or 6 months after the entry of the order setting non-jury trial, all of a sudden, the appellant filed a motion to enforce the right of a trial by jury. You know, I think this was a wrong motion. And the judge, you know, district court judge found it, you know, correctly. Because, you know, I could see the, you know, board, but right of trial by a jury should be enforced by the party, not by the court, Your Honor. NRCP 38A provides the right of a trial by jury as declared by the Constitution of this state or as given by a statute of the state shall be preserved to the party inviolate, Your Honor.
Counsel has asserted that your client would not have been prejudiced by a trial by jury. How do you respond to that?
You know, it is, in preparing for jury trial, it is very, you know, different from preparation for non-jury trial. And my concern is that this is, you know, the witnesses. We had two foreign language speaking, you know, group of two different group of foreign language speaking, you know, witnesses. Spanish speaking, you know, witnesses and Korean speaking witnesses. You know, from my own experience, Your Honor, when interpreter is
so, involved. I mean, this is what I think Chief Justice Douglas is really getting at, okay?
Yes.
In their complaint, they say they want a jury trial. Now, granted, they admitted that doesn't comply with Rule 38, but can you really say you didn't know it was coming, that they were a request was going to be coming at some point when it's right there in their complaint? Can you really say you were surprised by it?
Your Honor, that is not a notice, you know, demand for jury should be communicated to the court, Your Honor. And NRCP 38B explains how a party can enforce the right of a jury, Your Honor. Any party may demand a trial by a jury over any issue triable of a right by a jury by serving as required by Rule 5B, subsection B, upon the other parties, a demand, therefore, in writing, at any time after the commencement of the action, and not later than the time of the entry of the order, first setting the cause for trial.
But counsel didn't, I mean, and the best review of that, it was a simultaneous demand. They filed the complaint and the demand at the same time.
You know, Rule 5B is not about service of a process, Your Honor. Complaint is, you know, should be served with a summons under Rule 4 of a, you know, Nevada Civil Procedure, Your Honor. And it does not give a right notice to the court to set jury trial, Your Honor. And there is a reason why these rules exist, Your Honor. Rule 5B is all of court, you know, papers, including a demand, you know, about how those papers should be filed and served, Your Honor. The service was not made properly. And why? And to be honest, Your Honor, I was not aware of this, you know, last paragraph inserted in complaint for, you know, demand for jury, Your Honor.
Counsel, and you're responsible for everything that's in all the pages of that complaint. You take out the page because you want to take it out if it was in there.
Another fact actually the district court considered was in a parties filed joint early case conference report, and which was prepared by appellant as a plaintiff, Your Honor. In that section, both parties jointly requested for trial by non-jury trial, bench trial, Your Honor. And accordingly, the court set bench trial. Yeah. Of course, you know, after this joint case conference report is filed, you know, sometimes a party before the entry of this order.
The appellant's hanging his hat on the Walton case where the court under Rule 39 has the discretion to grant the jury trial even though the plaintiff in this case didn't properly request it. Isn't that important that the court could have, and then the Walton case goes through the factors to look at, but in the order from the district court, those aren't discovered, and I assume they aren't discussed, and I assume they're not discussed is because the plaintiff, appellant now, never presented them to the district court.
Your Honor, two facts, Your Honor. One was the plaintiff did not request the motion. Plaintiff appellant motion was not about to change this non-jury trial to jury trial. It was motion to enforce the right of trial by jury, Your Honor. And when we have rules, Your Honor, you know, in certain cases and special circumstances, we have exceptions. But in this case, the appellant did not produce any claim or any evidence why these special circumstances existed. So district court had no chance to review or consider any special circumstances to allow to find this exceptional in a case. But here, without even raising that special circumstances or warranting exception, just an appellant claim.
Well, the purpose of most deadlines, and I know we're out of time, but I'll give you another minute if that's okay with you. Yes. The purpose of most deadlines is because I'm worried about you being late, right? In most rules of civil procedure, if I give you 20 days to do something, it doesn't mean that I actually want you to do it on the 20th day. It usually means I don't want you to do it more than 20 days from now, but if you do it early, that's fine. The thing that the rules, that deadlines exist to prevent is being late. So in this case, their best argument is they were way early on this. Okay, so why is that blocked by the rule? It may not meet the technical definition of the rule, but why is there any prejudice? Why is that something that the rule even cares about? Being super, super early. You're so prepared that you're super early. Why is that something that the rule even cares about?
It was just too, prejudicial. This is selectionable witnesses, preparing for trial, our preparation was designed to have a non-jury trial. For example, if it was jury trial, we would have tried to find more English-speaking witnesses, and because when interpreter is involved, sometimes it is difficult for lawyer to convey our position to the jury, So for cases like this one, whether it is a non-jury trial or jury trial means a lot. And we have to prepare from the beginning. And the appellant lawyer knows that. Okay? So, and there are ample chances. And they never submitted to the district court why this, this case have a special circumstances to, for the court to find exception to Rule 38. It is not just automatically granted. And as, justice and the judges, found, this, the fact pattern of this case is fundamentally different from Walton case, And I really want to address this issue.
Counsel, I'm sorry. Responded to Judge Tao. Okay. I'm going to cut you off at this point because you used up.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Justice, I know you requested that I address the failure on the NRCP 38 rule as far as the jury demand is concerned, but briefly I'd like to just address something that the respondent brought up, saying that preparing for a jury trial is different from a bench trial, and this motion, if this motion was granted, they would have been prejudiced in that way. To be very clear, Your Honors, this motion was 7 months prior to the actual trial date. There would have been ample time to prepare for any kind of jury trial, bench trial, or what have you. Moving on, Justice.
But she was trying to say that the problems with interpreters to convey the information to a full panel of jurors versus one judge, it definitely would present a problem. And then the nature of the allegations on both sides, sexual harassment, infidelities, maybe people wouldn't want to have this discussed in that context in a jury, maybe thinking a judge would be better. I don't know, because there was no motion under Rule 39, so the judge didn't make any findings.
Correct, Justice. And I would like to address that issue going back to the Walton case. I do believe, despite the fact that a Rule 39 motion was not made by the appellants, the logic still is applied the same way. The logic that the motion requesting this jury trial was done well in advance, that there would have been no delay, no confusion, no surprise, no prejudice in this matter. And, frankly, Your Honors, I do think that the underlying action in this case, the defamation, the assault and batteries, these are all the type of cases that would have been perfect for a jury trial, would have been better suited for a jury trial. These are the types of cases that do go in for do go forth in front of jury trials all the time. And I think it would have been better suited in this case, especially for that.
Counsel, give us your closing thought.
Your Honors, I would just say that based on our oral argument, based on our opening brief, we ask that this be reversed and remanded. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Okay. This matter will stand submitted, and I didn't say the wonderful word submitted on the prior case, but that matter will stand submitted also. We thank counsel for the arguments presented this day. We do have...